I stand before you today.
The independent, autonomous reach of black female identity is ringing in her rhetoric.
Forces of change.
Proud to register to become first class citizens.
This is Radio Pages.
For a number of years, the Negro passengers on the city bus lines of Montgomery have been humiliated, intimidated, and faced threats on this bus line. Just the other day, one of the fine citizens of our community, Mrs. Rosa Parks, was arrested because she refused to give up her seat for a white passenger. Mrs. Rosa Parks was arrested and taken down to jail, taken from the bus, just because she refused to give up her seat. At present, we are in the midst of a protest, the Negro citizens of Montgomery, representing some 44% of the population. 90% at least of the regular Negro bus passengers are staying off the buses, and we plan to continue until something is done.
There are so many significant black figures within the world of civil rights. Cue the obligatory list of names.
Martin Luther King Jr.
Malcolm X.
Stokely Carmichael.
Congressman John Lewis.
Why does that list always have more men on it than women? Don't women have a lot to lose too? Have you ever wondered how the Montgomery bus boycott even came to be? What about the civil rights movement? Did Rosa Parks as Cedric the Entertainer so comedically illuminates just sit down?
Rosa Parks ain't do nothing but sit her black ass down.
If Rosa Parks was so useless to the movement, then how did a movement that was so well organized and so well funded come to have her not only as its secretary, but as its right-hand operator? Didn't know that? Sit back, and for the next few minutes, I'm going to take you on a history ride that answers one big question. In the civil rights movement, where are the women? I'm Michael Betts Second, and this is Missing History.
What's really interesting is that when you use the lens of sexual violence and you sort of hold it over the civil rights movement as a whole.
That's Dr. Danielle McGuire, a historian of racial and sexual violence in the United States.
And you start to dig into some of the stories that we know really well, like the Montgomery bus boycott or the Mississippi Freedom Summer or even the SNCC sit-ins, Selma. What you see with that lens is a prehistory to almost all those movements rooted in black women's demands for bodily integrity, because it's the one thing really that they care about the most is being able to move through the world without being violated. I mean, that's their point of vulnerability in every single space, even in their home sometimes. Bodily protection is key, and it's what motivates them to participate in movements for justice.
Dr. McGuire's book, At the Dark End of the Street, Black Women, Rape and Resistance, A New History of the Civil Rights Movement, From Rosa Parks to the Rise of Black Power, is helping to reshape our understanding of who was really at the heart of the civil rights movement.
You see that a whole decade before the Montgomery bus boycott, black women are mobilized around the issue of sexual violence, around the issue of protection of their bodies in public spaces, like on buses and in taxi cabs and on the street and places where you would wait or parks or in the workplace in particular. You also see then that those little beginnings of infrastructure building around the issue of sexual violence become catalytic, powerful organizational structures for the civil rights movement. So black women ended up being at the center, the very core of every major campaign that we know about, even if they weren't always visible as spokeswomen the way that we would see like Dr. King or Reverend Shuttlesworth or, you know, any of the other male minister leaders that we associate with the movement.
Wait, so women not only were a part of the movement, but they were the purpose of the movement? If women were so significant to civil rights, why does the historical narrative leave them out?
For a long time, the master narrative was rooted in what was printed in the white newspapers. So the first draft of civil rights history really looks like the front page of the New York Times over those years. And then journalists dig in and they start to say, well, what happened locally? What happened in Clarksdale, Mississippi? And what happened in Selma, Alabama? And you go deep into local stories. And then women in women's history, they start saying, well, what were the women doing? What's happening here? And so then we get a more gendered history. So it's not that Black women are erased. It's that on some level, I think civil rights historians didn't think of sexual violence as a civil rights issue, not because they didn't see it as important for people's individual safety and personal liberty, but because it wasn't defined as a, quote, civil right by many of the major organizations like the NAACP or the SCLC, even though those organizations on a local level across the country were working to defend Black women who were attacked by white men and assaulted in both racially and sexual ways.
Everything in terms of the news people talking was about Dr. King and Ralph Abernathy and Reverend Shuttlesworth. And I mean, there were names that I remember hearing, but then I also do remember seeing Fannie Lou Hamer. I didn't know who Ella Baker was when it was happening. I knew who Fannie Lou Hamer was when it was happening. I didn't know a lot of the other women's names. I, of course, knew Rosa Parks' name.
That's director Courtney Reed Eaton. She's the exhibitions director at the Center for Documentary Studies at Duke University, the creative director for Documentary Diversity Project at the Center for Documentary Studies at Duke University, as well as the co-founder of the Black Feminist Bookmobile. As a 60-year-old Black woman, she has come to know the immense power of the women of the civil rights movement, one most notably being Rosa Parks.
I mean, she looked like the pictures, you know, she was sitting, I do remember thinking she was so beautiful, because the way she had those like Heidi braids braided up on circling her head, like a crown, and she wore glasses, that was beautiful. The story, she was a humble seamstress, and she was tired, and she had to sit down. She was so tired. I think she was tired, but I don't think it was necessarily physical tiredness. I think it was a different kind of tiredness. And then over the past 20 years or so, I've learned about her persistent activism. You know, that she was an activist before the civil rights movement, during the civil rights movement, and after the civil rights movement.
You might remember that poem by Paul Laurence Dunbar, "We Wear the Mask That Grins and Lies." Rosa Parks' public mask, I think, is a very soft-spoken, quiet seamstress who is not here to bother anybody, but her private life is really Black radical politics.
Rosa Parks' embrace of W.E.B. Du Bois' double consciousness gives her the ability to actively investigate sexual assault all throughout Alabama via justice committees for both Gertrude Perkins and Recy Taylor, respectively. Be the secretary for E.D. Nixon at A. Philip Randolph's Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters, and be the secretary for E.D. Nixon as the president of the Montgomery NAACP, all while keeping the public image, as director Reed Eaton so pleasantly put it.
She was a humble seamstress.
Oh, and to top it all off,
he believes in armed self-defense. So does Rose Parks. She hates white men. She hates white supremacy. She hates racial violence. She is a fierce advocate for freedom and justice. I wouldn't call her outspoken. Right, she is very soft spoken. She's sort of a quiet operator, but in her personal life, you know, she has no interest in hanging around with any kind of accommodator or Booker T. Washington type guy. Right, it's why she marries her husband. Right, because he is an advocate for the Scottsboro Boys. He is dark-skinned, he carries a pistol in his pocket, and he is just sort of unintimidated.
But all the world knows is this sweet old seamstress grandma who is just too tired to stand up.